Hey everyone, welcome to AI with Alex Live. I'm very excited today to be joined by Bijal Mehta and Mason Seki-Cable. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Of course, pleasure's mine. Thank you for coming on. Today I've got a nice agenda of things to talk about. I'm very excited to get into it. You guys are working on some, you both are working on some very interesting things. So this should be a great conversation. And again, thanks for your time. For those of you that are joining us today live, if you want to ask questions or comment, by all means, feel free. We should be able to see it and we'll try and answer as we go. So feel free to use that. And of course, if you haven't subscribed to AI with Alex yet on YouTube, by all means, if you want to be updated about the latest videos and interviews coming up. And so with that, again, Bijal and Mason, thank you so much. How's your day gone so far?
Going well.
Yeah, it's primarily just been this. I've been looking forward to been doing a whole lot of my internet was actually out like 2 hours ago, so sweating just a little bit. I was telling Bijal about it, and it was but we're good. We're here. I didn't have to run to the school and like use their internet and have like the mask and all the things so you could see. It's a little bit more natural. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this. This would be fantastic.
Good. Yeah. I mean, it's like Murphy's Law, right? Of course, right when you go live on YouTube and everything else, things, I've certainly had that happen in the past. So, okay. So both of you are students at Northwestern University, and you're both co-presidents of a group called, a student group called Raizo, which I believe people can find at raizo.org, which is R-A-I-S-O.org. We'll talk here in a minute more about that organization. But before we dive into that, I just wanted to get a better sense of, what you're doing at Northwestern in terms of where you're studying, what kind of degree program are you doing, and, what's sort of the biggest interest you have right now, at least at the university stuff that you're working on.
Yeah, Bijal, do you actually want to run first? Because you just graduated.
Yeah, actually.
Oh, congrats.
I just officially graduated in March.
Yay.
Big. But I studied social policy and computer science. So that really sparked my interest in the intersection of policy and tech. Mm. And I hope to work in that area. I want to go to law school, hope to become a lawyer, tech lawyer, and work on stuff related to AI, law, policy. But yeah. Happy to be graduated, for sure.
Yeah, huge congrats, and very cool. That's an exciting area. I'm excited to talk more about that throughout this this interview. Awesome, thank you. Mason.
So yeah, I actually came to Northwestern in 2017 as a transfer student. I started college when I was pretty young, right around 15. So I went to community college for 2 years and transferred at 17. Not all of my credits possibly went over, so the big four-year plan kind of took over from there. Kind of spent the first 2 years just kind of messing around in computer science. I was a computer engineering major in the beginning, transitioned to computer science because in 2019, my interest in AI kind of started to kick on a little bit. Took some regular cognitive science classes, and those things kind of melded overall, just computers thinking like people, making intelligent decisions. I was this is kind of where I want to be. Fast forward 2 years, I took a good amount of time off from school in 2020 just because pandemic stuff. I know a lot of other people that have more or less done the same. And during the summer of 2020 is when my interest in responsible technology and the intersection between tech and humanities kind of came to, there should probably be more conversations about this stuff at the university level. And then we can go from there. That's more or less my background.
Awesome. And thank you both for that. And I could see why you're both sort of working together on this project. It's very complimentary. You have sort of Bijal comes with the tech policy kind of that's an interesting sort of complement to, Mason. Clearly, you have more of that computer science, sort of technical programmery, data science-y type background, which is very cool. So now in terms of Raizo, I wanted to start with, I looked at the website earlier today and I noticed you have sort of a description, which was, I'm just reading it here, Raizo is a community of young people passionate about the responsible, social conscious use of technology in the world. It's very well written. It makes sense. It seems to cover sort of already both of the areas that we've talked about during your your introductions. But maybe expand on that. How did that become sort of, I don't know if you would call that the mission statement or just the description of what Raiso is, but how did you come up with that? Did you work on it together? Is there anything else you'd like to add detail-wise behind that before we dive, obviously, more into Raiso and its mission?
Mason, do you want to go ahead?
So then I like diving into the origin story of Raiso and how everything more or less got started. It's got a funny story. The talk for like a responsible technology organization at Northwestern more or less began in September of 2020. Around this time, I was like, okay, there's no like AI/data science or like technical organization like centered around like those specific topics at Northwestern. And on top of that, I was just fresh off of reading a good chunk of Surveillance Capitalism by Shoshana Zuboff that basically talks about like data extraction basically being like the 21st century like business model and how that can be like incredibly bad as well as, I believe, like, you know, very good for a lot of other things. And it was honestly, frankly, just like pure intuition. Like, we should be like talking about this stuff because right at that point there was like nothing. And so it began with a very general email to some computer science professors, basically saying, I think we should have a student organization talking about not just AI, but like AI ethics and responsible technology, which at this point I know like next to nothing about, but thinking, oh, you know, it could be important. I got a mixed response, actually. Some people were like in love with the idea and like, oh, like you should start this, like, you know, I'll help you find an advisor because I can't do it, but I'll help you find one. And a couple of professors were like, we have like labs that take care of this stuff. Like, we talk about it like week 10. Like, we don't really need to like, you know, like we already have like conversations about computer science ethics. And that didn't really suffice for me. And so I went diving around seeing if I could find anyone else who would be interested in this. And so I found the Tree Lab at Northwestern. Is that tech, race, ethics, and education?
Tech, race, ethics, and equity in education lab. So 3 E's.
And so that is the only lab at Northwestern that kind of seemed like it matched the mold for me, just again, like as like a pure CS person. And I connected with Professor Sarah Van Wart, who's the research lead at the lab. And she suggested that I hop in on one of their weekly calls. And that's actually where I'm at Beagle. We were the only two people on that call. She was like moderating it and I was just kind of there. And we didn't like actually start talking till like 20 minutes later. It almost didn't happen. Like it almost didn't happen at all. Cause I was just kind of like idle the whole time. Cause I was like, oh, there's like no one here. And then I just start kind of talking about why I was there. And she was like interested in starting something related to this as well. And we kind of just said, oh, it's like, you know, this talk asynchronously over the next few months. So we didn't actually get together like all of our thoughts on paper or in like a drive for like another month, month and a half. Like, it wasn't really like done or like sendable to other students or faculty until like mid-late November. We sent it to a couple of listservs and we had 65 signatures from students and a bunch of comments. We actually saw like our quote block. That's all from people about like a really general idea. It was just an idea at this point, just a concept. And people were like, I really think these issues are incredibly important. We should form this now. And 2/3 of people said, let's get involved. Let's actually make this a thing. Fast forward a month from there, we were an official student organization. We had 11 executive members. And fast forward today, we've got 100 people, more or less, in the organization. There's 30 exec members, if you include everyone that's kind of like in these. And we can talk a little bit more specifically about the programs. But yeah, kind of going back to like the general idea, that's kind of how the whole thing got started, is that it was like very general. And we were kind of like, let's just see more or less what sticks, what people have to say about this stuff. And do a lot of testing. We have a lot of exec chairs, we have a lot of members, and from there we've kind of been like distilling some stuff down. But that more or less designs like the general feel around everything. If you want to expand on that a little bit.
Yeah. And I think on my end, like the summer before we started Raiso, I did a internship with the Berkman Klein Center on Internet Society, and it was about these issues of like AI policy, digital rights, things like that. And after that, I got like really, really interested in it. And because of COVID, a lot of organizations were allowing people to volunteer online. So I started volunteering with All Tech is Human and Women in Ethics, and I got like really involved in this community. And it was amazing to see all these like activists and like lawyers and people that like aren't maybe from like a technical background, but are working so hard in this area and making a huge difference. And I realized like, as an undergrad student, I didn't even know that was possible. I didn't know I could come from like a social policy background and be able to work on issues related to tech. Cause I was like, I may not have programming experience. I mean, for me, I did computer science, but for other students, like they may be interested in tech, but not like the programming side of it, more of its implications and how it's actually being used. So that's when I was like, it's interesting that even in my CS classes, we don't really talk about it. And in my policy classes, it's like, okay, the internet and stuff is starting to have a really big impact on policy, but like, we're not really sure where that connection is, and students don't get the chance to like talk about that connection. So when Mason showed up to the meeting, I was really excited because I was like, oh, I didn't know there's other students that were interested in this. This isn't really talked about. And I thought it's really interesting because like, it seems right now a lot of young students, they do really want to make a social impact. But for a lot of people going to tech, it's really hard to work at like a tech for good organization because they may not be well funded and things like that. So we really just wanted to make an environment where like people who do know how to program, don't know how to program, can kind of come together and just talk about, okay, let's really figure out how tech is impacting us and impacting our future. And like maybe impacts medicine, maybe impacts my field and like gender studies. Like I don't have to have a tech background, but I know like tech is really a big part of a lot of different disciplines. So we wanted to make a space for all the students to kind of come together and learn how to really like collaborate. So I think that's going to be really big in the future. Is like, it's not just going to be CS students that are going to be creating these technologies. It's a lot of like collaboration. So when I met Mason, I was like, oh, this is so cool. Like we can make it for everyone. It's not just going to be CS students. And when we sent out that form, like, I think actually, I mean, a lot were CS students for sure. But we did get a lot of responses from people who study like psychology, cognitive science, like different areas that have such a big impact on AI. So I was really excited to see that happen. And I think there's definitely a lot of young people who want to work in this area. There just wasn't a lot of avenues until like we made a club like this. And I'm seeing like other universities and a lot of actual high school student organizations are starting similar things, which are amazing. But I think it's going to get bigger and bigger.
Cool. Yeah, that's great. All right. Well, and that's really, I love that you're trying to help people understand that there's these roles and ways to get involved in technology, especially on the, as you said, ethical, responsible side, but that aren't just programmers. And that's actually been kind of a mission of mine too, which is why that really caught my ear in that, I mentioned this on another interview that I did here, but I created a talk called Tech Careers Rock that I've delivered to try and promote STEM careers to people at earlier ages that may not understand that you don't have to be a software engineer and you don't have to be a data scientist, because there's project managers, product managers, QA designer, UX, UI designers. And now you make a great point. There's the policy side as well. There's the governance, there's the, you know, the social aspects. And especially now with, with ethics and responsible and accountable AI being talked about more, we also are seeing in the real world roles around those things. Mm-hmm. So you'll have like chief AI or chief ethics officers, chief compliance officers, chief, or similar roles. But that's great. Awesome. I want to dive more into the both of what you each said here in a minute. But real quick, in terms of Rezo, so that now we understand kind of the origin of it, which is very cool. Thanks for walking us through that. In terms of what does the organization do? Maybe you can talk really briefly about that. Like, what does Rezo do today? How are you? Is it just discussions? Do you have events? Do you do other things? Do you have a roadmap for tomorrow? And by tomorrow, I mean, whenever tomorrow, like down the road, do you have certain goals you're trying to build the organization to? And then finally, and sorry, this is how I tend to do it. I like just ask all kinds of questions at once so we can go back and go one by one. But, and then finally with you, Abijal, graduating, does that mean you're sort of passing off the torch? Are you going to stick around and help out? So anyway, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, I guess I can talk a bit. I know Mason mentioned that we have like 11 exec members. Yeah. So when we started Rezo, we're like, there is so much we could do. We have so many ideas. And we're like, you know what? Why not? Let's just try it all, see what sticks. So we have about 9 committees. And some of them are more administrative, like logistics and finance, but there's a lot of different areas we wanted to cover. So we have like an education group. So they're focused on putting on these discussions. We just had one last night. So it's just inviting people to join. We just talk about different topics. Yesterday we talked about AI and online dating, which a lot of people liked. So we do like interesting talks like that. We have a group for speakers and events. So those are people who are going to bring in speakers. So we had a lawyer, her name is Jiyeon Han. She does amazing work on like algorithmic discrimination in New York. And she came and spoke to her students, which is really cool. And then we have a newsletter committee. That's one of our biggest things right now that we started and has gotten a lot of response from. So we have a newsletter called Hold the Code. And Mason can talk about this more because he's worked a lot on that. But one of the committees I am like really involved in is the partnerships and advocacy committee. And this kind of aligns with the policy side that I'm really interested in. Because I wanted to make an organization where we could actually work on these issues. Like, yes, we can talk about them and learn about them. That's a very big part, but we do also want to have an impact. So we're trying to partner with like different organizations and see if we can get like the community of our students and just like undergraduates and like in general, just get them involved in this space. Because I know for me, from like sophomore year, I knew I was really interested in this, but there just weren't a lot of internships or like a good few every now and then that would pop up, but there wasn't any like set career paths, set sort of like way of getting involved in responsible tech or AI ethics. So we really want to like work with all these new like AI civil society organizations. There's a lot of nonprofits growing and like work with them to kind of create sort of internship programs for undergraduates, or maybe like volunteering opportunities and make it more streamlined. So kind of helping students see that there's a lot of opportunities to have more of a social impact versus going to work at like Google or Facebook being like, you know, you want to help the world. So maybe try these like other organizations. But yeah, and also work with like maybe like our local government and stuff and do like workshops in our community about like data privacy, digital safety, things like that, kind of educating more people about like this is going to be a really big part of our lives, and it is right now, but it's kind of like hidden for some people. So we really want to get our voice out there and really try to influence the community as much as we can. Mason, I know I missed a couple committees, but Mason can cover like other half of Rezo.
I was going to say one of the main things that's really, I think, molded a lot of the ways that the committees have developed and shaped is that we've been completely remote. I haven't met Bijal yet in person. I haven't met anybody at all in the organization, which is kind of shaped a lot of the things that we do. It's definitely been more, well, it's of course, it's been like more online based, but like for example, our like speakers and events committee, a potential bottleneck in the beginning could have been like funding. Like there's a lot of other student organizations that have to have like traction or have like some sort of level of funding, either by the school or primarily by the school, yeah. In order to put on events. And we've been able to hold events basically since like day one. We've reached out to people. People are like love to talk about what they do, whether it be in, you know, research or advocacy. One's actually going next Friday. There's somebody coming in who I connected with in the All Tech is Human Slack channel. And we basically just got to talking about things. We talked about something before, and he's a professor at the University of Delft in the Netherlands, an ethics professor. And it was like, yeah, I love to do stuff like this. And so it's been, you know, actually much easier than if we were probably doing this in like a standard setting where we maybe had to worry about actually bringing in people, because there's a whole lot more logistics to that. Like if this was perhaps like 2 years ago, it probably would have been a lot harder. And as well, I think like it's one of the reasons why our discussions have been completely online, which could maybe work better in person, because like I know some Northwestern organizations, they do like catering to like actually bring people in. And the third is newsletter. So if there's speakers and events, those discussions, which are very like candid discussions with like the one yesterday was like 16 people, our events usually like 20, 25 people. Very candid, very relaxed. Like anybody's like willing to talk about some things, and it's fun. We want it to be fun, instead of just very like cold and like technical, where only like certain people can understand what's going on, only certain people can interject. And our newsletter has been like fantastic. We have we currently have one, Hold the Code. It's a weekly newsletter. It's basically, its tagline is like, a newsletter is so easy to read that you don't have to have an engineering degree to do it. So it basically introduces these really complicated topics, whether it be like topics of statistics or topics of machine learning, or like more general topics like like facial recognition, where of course you need to understand a lot going on like behind the scenes, but you don't really need to understand that to like understand how it could be used. And so we more or less try to like emphasize both of those two things. And we have about 100 subscribers. It's very good. It's a lot of fun. And more towards like looking into the future. Those have been the primary three that have like worked incredibly well. I think partnerships and advocacy is one of those things that's also a little bit longer time horizon that we want to like forge those partnerships and everything that Beto's already said. So that'll kind of be like the four things that we have going on. Another big thing that's been mentioned internally is some sort of chapter program, like with IEEE and Women in Computing. There's like other chapters at other universities. Still to this day, we're one of the only student organizations doing this, and like organizations of young people, like 18 to 25 in general, that's talking about this stuff very candidly. And so we thought it would be like fantastic to maybe increase membership, well, like basic membership to other people, other universities, or other avenues where like still like core membership, like if there's like an application process, would be, you know, just Northwestern students. I think that mentality stems from it, again, us being like really, really isolated and realizing, oh, it's really hard to keep conversations going on Slack and with email. And we thought like, hey, if there's such like tremendous interest in this, there's probably tremendous interest elsewhere. And that just helps our community as well and gets more people involved. So that is more or less where I think this could be going into the future, is perhaps a chapter program, which leads to, of course, we couldn't apply for university funding because we're so new. So we're thinking about like, oh, if we have like traction there, then we could apply for funding. Cause again, like those events we have to bring people on is going to be quite challenging. So it's just more of what's working. And those are the three things that are working really well. And we want to stick with like partnerships and advocacy.
Great. I mean, it sounds like you have a plan in place, you're executing, you're well organized, you've got some good initial traction, you're building up the newsletter, which is great. So that's great to hear. Congrats on, you know, these early successes. Because again, you said the first meeting was like September 2020. So all things considered, the organization is still relatively new, which is good. And one of the questions I wanted to ask is around, you know, technology, because I know it sounds like AI comes up a lot. So is AI sort of a primary focus for Rezo, or are there other technology? Is it just technology in general and sort of the ethical and responsible use of technology in general? Maybe you both can expand on that a little bit more.
Yeah. I think like when Mason and I met, it was mostly around AI specifically, because I think that's kind of like a buzzword of when people talk about tech that's having a big impact. It's like AI, what's happening? What is it doing? That's kind of like where we started. But yeah. I think we do plan, and we kind of have been expanding to other areas, just like internet. And Mason kind of coined this term, but he calls it like contemporary technologies. So things that are having like a really big impact on our society. So AI, the internet, like social media, things like that. So I think we are kind of expanding, and we're very open to talk about other things related to tech. I think it's like centered around AI to talk about more like the modern technologies we're encountering. But yeah, I think we're still very open to like talking about other topics as well, because I think people have a lot of interest in different areas in tech, and we want to be as open to those people as possible. We don't want to like shut ourselves down to a small community of people.
Yeah. And branching off that a little bit in terms of like C-tech, I don't like the word AI. Like it just seems, it's very like in computer, like computes things. I was like, maybe there's like a good term here that can kind of wrap around like programming 2.0 or like data-driven programming. Cause like most organizations or most like businesses now are like internet/data businesses, like as opposed to like even like 20, 30 years ago where that process was very new. And even in the 2000s, like Facebook and other companies realized that there's like an abundance of information that's just like there and our users are just giving us. So that for us seems like a very clear like fork in the road in terms of like, okay, this is like new, this is different, this is hard to discern from these other things. It's complicated, there's a lot of layers of abstraction to this. And it could be as simple as like a spam filter or like tracking pixels inside email, like hey.com, like last year, the email client there, one of the things is like, we are very against tracking and we're very against like tracking pixels and even in Slack with like status messages and stuff like that. So like, that just seems like a whole different category for us. And we're still kind of working out the, you know, the borders to that, but anything that's like more data-driven programming 2.0 kind of qualifies as like C-Tech. And it can be incredible. Not everybody's doing AI, not everybody has to. Most everyone is like has a body of users, they have some sort of like, you know, demographics, and we're trying to like through like these business practices, like, you know, serve those people. And that seems like the overarching category to that, and something that's very new and quite novel and honestly not quite old, like only 10, 15 years old. Stuff like mobile's accelerated that. So we think anything like centered around that is C-Tech and what we wanna touch on and talk about.
Mm-hmm. And like one thing I wanna add also is like I think we really also want to talk about the systems around it. Like, I guess that's more the policy side, but like, how are these companies, like big tech companies, creating these technologies? How are they being implemented? So like gig economy, content moderation, like all those other topics that come alongside the tech itself. We also want to be talking about that and having discussions about that. So I think like we still haven't really coined that perfect term yet that encapsulates all of that. But that's where like responsible AI, we knew was like a buzzword that's kind of been inferred as talking about all those things. So that's where we started. But maybe that's something we'll work on in the future, is finding a better term to kind of encapsulate everything.
Yeah, I mean, that was really well put though. I think it was pretty clear what you're focusing on. And it's cool that you, I mean, AI is such a funny term because it also is such a massive field too, right? It means it's not just, from my experience, sort of like a little bit ambiguous for a lot of people and not clearly defined and all these things, but it also spans a huge amount of things, right? Like computer vision, pattern recognition, predictive analytics, prescriptive analytics, personalization, recommendation systems, you know, natural language processing and understanding and dot, dot, dot. And it just, you know, it keeps going and going, even clustering and segmentation and all these things. So it's a huge, you know, modeling, forecasting, it just goes and goes and goes. And now we're seeing such an explosion of real world applications and use cases that it's hard to grapple sometimes, but there's other technologies as well. And I really like what you were saying, Mason, by the way, about this data-driven concept, because at the end of the day, a lot of the, at least the policies today that are coming up, like GDPR in Europe and things, are more on the data side in a way. It's more about like what's happening with your data. Do you consent to that happening with your data? Which could mean modeling or being, you know, being served personalized experiences or something that does use AI or whatever. You know, can you have a right to opt in or out, or have your information deleted if you want? How transparent are things? So, you know, data is definitely the engine of AI, which is pretty interesting. And as you say, you know, all of that is having a bigger impact on society. So with that, I know, Bijal, you're sort of really interested in empowering young students to kind of get into tech, but the responsible side. What do you mean by young students, and how do you think you can empower them?
Yeah, I think by that I also mean people who may not even work in responsible tech, but they're going to be working in fields where tech's going to be really big. So like one example I use a lot are a lot of like pre-med students. They're probably going to be working in hospital, yes, but like they will encounter different technologies and like different things that are going to come up. Like clinical algorithms are really big now. And just kind of like empowering students to really think about how are these technologies actually working. Like they'll probably just use it, whatever, but don't really think about the actual implications. And some of them are great, yes, but I think it's good to have like a critical eye of those technologies. And I think the hope is that like by starting an organization like this, where it's very open to all students and they get to learn just a little bit about it, they'll just have that idea in their head that, okay, I should probably think critically about technologies I'm going to be using, because they can have a racial bias, they can have all these issues.
Yeah.
So I think that's like the empowering side, is kind of making students who may not work in a tech space feel empowered to talk about technology and have like that knowledge that, okay, I don't know how to code it, but I know how it works. I know how it can be used in a good and bad way. And I want to make sure that it's being used responsibly when I use it or someone in my field is using it. So that is kind of what I mean by that empowered side. But also on the flip side of students who are in a CS background, but want to learn like, okay, these technologies I might be in the future creating, how can I make sure in my like steps of design, my product management, things like that, how can I make sure I'm doing it in a way that's ethical and I'm actually having a good social impact and I'm not like creating something that may be a detriment to society, versus like really considering what can be these impacts and like, can I mitigate them in any way in the way I'm designing the system? Can I like ask more people, maybe reach out to other stakeholders that we didn't really think about, like kind of just empowering students to think more outside of the actual technology itself, whether they're building it, whether they're using it in their own field, and like really think critically about it before they start to use it. Because I think that's going to have such a big jump in how we like work with technology and how we actually make them responsible, is all these students that are going to be going out into the world and have like that small thought in their head of like, okay, I'm using this technology. It may not be the greatest. Let me like think about how I can make it better, how I can use it in a more responsible way, and work from there.
Interesting. So yeah, that whole big picture view, the 360 view, that's interesting way to look at it. Mason, I know you as well kind of also look at it through the lens of a business too. Like, what does that mean for business? You know, maybe you can talk a little bit about that. Like, what, how do you think, just talk about through the lens of business and how business can adapt and so on.
I've spent a lot of the past like 2 or 3 months thinking about like that exact topic, and also realizing how little I know about that connection, and that it's just incredibly complicated, because it comes down to like the system of a business and what is like the overall goal of a business is to like maximize shareholder value. That's kind of been the way it is for a very long time, and like lately, and I think this more or less began with like climate change, as this like, oh, like ExxonMobil and these other, and a lot of other companies, which are probably very self-explanatory. Or even maybe going back to the tobacco industry, like this is actually causing like, you know, damage to people. And that was obviously regulated away. A lot of it was regulated away. And then we entered like maybe like the climate change phase, where this could be like, if it's greenhouse gas emissions, logistics, supply chain kind of stuff. This is like, you know, ultimately like not a great thing. Like, it's not good, but like fixing that system is like a systems integration problem. Like, where do people come in? Like, how much do they have to know in order to say like, okay, not only do we think this is going to like, you know, still not really, really affect the bottom line in a lot of ways, but like over a really, really long period, like potentially be a good thing, like going to renewables or like the next like 5 or 10 years, could potentially be a very good thing. Also for marketing, like a lot of other companies, I've read something about like Lipton iced tea, like moving to protected forests, like they had to charge a little bit more, but it ultimately didn't matter in the end, because like they were able to say, oh, grown in protected forests, and like people actually really jived with that. Like they were like, oh, I'd love to buy this because I'm like not worried that this is like, you know, passively probably like destroying a forest like halfway across the world. And I'm not entirely sure what that would look like in terms of like data, AI, and privacy, but like ultimately there's probably, you know, something there. Does it revolve around privacy? Does it revolve around, oh, like over like the next 5 years, these like, if you want to call them like injustices, or you want to call like the detriment to mental health, or like the polarization that's being caused, like the erosion of democracy, like in a lot of ways, like the way in which we have discourse is being like messed with or eroded away, because people kind of see like things or like reality through their own like augmented lens, or what they're being suggested, like they're unable to see things like any other way. If that's like, if that's quantifiable, if it's able to see like, oh, like clearly what they're doing is like quite bad, we can do it in a different way. Not sure what that way would be. If it's radical transparency. So there's a lot of ideas behind there where, you know, potentially there can be like that idea of like maximizing value, but also having a strong like social impact. Why like B Corp so much? I think that's like, you know, fantastic model, because as well as we're like doing like traditional, like buying, like selling a product, we're also like, there's a social good like attached to that as well. I'm very like willing to say very amateurish in this. I've only been looking at it for like 2-3 months, reading Professor Henderson, Rebecca Henderson's book, what's it called? Reimagining Capitalism in a World on Fire. Yeah, there we go. About halfway through that, and it talks through a lot of these case studies, and basically we're going to have to like rethink this idea of just like purely maximizing value, because like, you know, like growth is going to have a limit, and with technology, it's exponential in terms of transistor size, in terms of like data that's being processed because of compute power, because of these algorithms. You know, there's just a lot of like, you know, we don't really know. And again, part of the reason Razor exists is to just put more people into that conversation, get more people's ideas to bounce off one another. And for me, they can't be like pure technologists. Realistically speaking. And so a lot of that sounds like intuition. A lot of that sounds like, oh, so we've done that with, I want to say tobacco industry again, like obviously that was like scientifically backed, that's causing a problem. It's kind of like gone the same direction with climate change. Like, oh, scientifically backed, this is a problem. That one being a lot harder. I think a similar thing here, if you want to talk about like erosion of democracy and public discourse, getting anything done. Mental health is another big one. Like, that is like the center for, I think, like, this problem that like raises like, okay, so beginning like 16, 17, like going into college, that's when you should realistically, you know, start talking about this stuff, because you go to college to, you know, get a job and get work experience. Like there's nothing that exists there that's preparing you to have like these kinds of conversations.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And there's a lot of work to be done for sure in all those areas that you all are focusing on. And in terms of, you know, do you think, you know, how do you think students can, because it sounds like you all focus a lot on sort of the social media stuff, the discourse stuff, those kind of aspects. So that's a big area, obviously. There's also, you know, I think you're hearing more about how you test for these algorithmic biases. Like, can you QA for that stuff? Can you plan for it and try and make sure? Because a lot of it's sort of baked into the underlying data, right? So you have to even look at the data, and how do you, you know, the data like reflects all these real world things too, problems too, right? And there's so much going on there. I'm curious on your thoughts on other sides of AI, which are, you know, there's a lot of applications nowadays that you hear about that are, you know, reducing environmental impact or helping in climate change or helping in, you know, things like deforestation or keeping the oceans clean or rebuilding coral reefs or detecting diseases earlier for people, resulting in more personalized, targeted, better health outcomes and all this. So there's this like whole other side of AI that has this really sort of, it's very driven for positive human impact. And one other thing I'll mention too is, you know, a big area, are you both familiar with the idea of augmented human intelligence as opposed to just pure automation?
Semi-familiar.
Yeah.
So it's sort of the idea of, you know, because I know rightfully a big concern people have when they think of AI is like their job being automated away, right? A lot of the research and a lot of the applications of AI and interest in AI by many companies is to actually use AI to augment people's jobs, meaning to automate some of the tedious, repetitive, rote tasks so that they can do the things they enjoy doing at their job more and be more productive, be more effective, and ultimately be happier with what they do every day because they're not focused as much on some of these other things. So it's sort of like a win-win. For the company, because happy employees are great and happy employees are happy. So that, you know, it's, so I'm curious, are there certain specific areas that you're really, really focused on? Are you also paying attention to some of these other things and bringing those into the conversations as well? I'd love to learn a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, this is like a conversation Mason and I had like kind of in the beginning. It's like, we don't want to be very negative about technology. We want to be like, technology is bad. Let's teach everyone that don't interact with technology, like delete Facebook and those sort of things. But we wanted to talk about like, we are able to change things. Like we're probably going to be the next workers at Facebook, Google, whatever. We are able to have impact. And there are so many examples of like AI being used to help so many people, especially like you were saying, like a lot of environmental issues, like AI has been used like very well there. And that is stuff we want to talk about. That is stuff we want to cover and be like, there's applications where AI can have such a drastic impact because it's those like repetitive specific task that like doesn't require that human social part of it. Like, I think people have considered those, and like in those kind of fields of like the environment, there is a big social like component to that. But in terms of how AI can help with deforestation, like there isn't that like impact on humans and that emotional side that's not really there. But when you try to apply AI in areas like facial recognition, policing, like there's so much like social bias and inequalities there where there needs to be much more critical thinking about how are we using these technologies and do we really want to make these technologies. So I think like differentiating to students that like these technologies can be amazing and they are going to be most likely used. Like there's no, we're not stopping the technology. We want to just create a new workforce of students and like people who are going to be working in the future who can like think critically about it and think of ways like, okay, here's a very clear positive influence. And like the people we have talked to, the communities where it's going to be used, they all agree that this is going to be very helpful versus other technologies that have a lot more conflict around them that need more discussion, that need more like community input and more people talking about, okay, is this something we really want to create? Like, do we really want facial recognition, whatever, in our community? Is that what everyone agrees on? So I think we are trying to facilitate that conversation of like, where do we want to see these technologies grow really well and where do we not want to see them? And one area of RAISE that we didn't actually touch on is we have a projects committee. So eventually we're hopefully starting next year, is to have students actually work on projects. And these can be like both technical and non-technical. So maybe working on like an issue at Northwestern that maybe there's some sort of algorithm or something we can create that would help some sort of issue at Northwestern. But thinking about a way of like creating that whole product environment where you're involving students that aren't programming students, but are very involved in that topic area, or maybe like, let's work with psych students to see how like we can make this algorithm that helps students with like focusing on their tasks, something like that. But like really think of ways of how are we going to develop these technologies so we are really involving all the stakeholders and making sure that it is that pure benefit that we want out of it. And we don't have to compromise issues of like, oh, but their data has to be like used or exploited. Like that part, we want to just like get rid of, if that makes sense. Like we want to imagine if we can make technologies that are actually beneficial for everyone. We don't have to worry about like Facebook exploiting our data and things like that. Just reimagining how we can live with these technologies because they're going to be part of our lives, but like making sure they are actually working well for everyone. Yeah, Mason, you can talk more about that.
Yeah, you basically nailed it. One of the things I thought a little bit about, like right around January when we were like organizing RAISO and basically decide like, you know, what is important and, you know, what are we going to focus on? One of the things, and this is again, like kind of like implicit, is there's this aspect of like, we don't know. It's very hard to make predictions about like artificial intelligence and how it's going to like Alex, you mentioned like the difference between like automated and augmenting. Like GPT-3 came out last year and immediately from there, there's these whole new set of companies. One of them includes like Copy AI, which basically like says, I have a business. One of their examples is like Facebook, for example, but like if I have a company or I have a startup and I want to like, you know, increase my marketing efforts and just produce better copy. Now there's something that does like 80% of the work. And maybe with its like massive data sets, it finds some underlying script or underlying, you know, pattern. And it basically like generates that. And I think that's like augmentation. It's not really able to like, again, like write like full articles in a way that's like, oh, this is like perfectly what we want. But it is that like, that message of like augmentation. On top of that, I thought about like a lot of WYSIWYG tools and how like maybe like right now there's like including like Webflow and Squarespace, like websites are being built by like designers and people who necessarily don't know how to code. But again, they're just making like, you know, static websites with like HTML, CSS and JavaScript, like moving a button around. Will within the next 5 years, like AI be WYSIWYG, or there'll be ways, okay, here's my data set. You put it inside like some sort of WYSIWYG editor and it creates this output or like increases this like metric in some certain way. You know, that may be taken out of like the computer programmer's hands, although they'll be like building it. There'll be another like layer above that where it's going to be, you know, very hard to like turn back. Like in and around there. So there's definitely that like air of like, we don't know, but we think it's like important to discuss. So in around there as well. And again, we think like as that line between like technology and like people like begins to like, you know, shrink. And like AI also like is like thrown in there as well. Again, yeah, just having people from different backgrounds like bounce things on top of one another will probably like create new things as well instead of like just like passively discussing stuff. And again, there's that also that topic of like ethics and like just having general conversations about this stuff isn't really like actionable. Like, oh, we can like talk about it and get together and like have events around this. And one of the reasons I like, you know, the newsletter and also why I like the discussions that we put on is that they're like actually quite interactive. Like online learning is like super bad. And one of the innovations in that space is like obviously cohort-based learning, which is basically like we put people in this setting and it's like tightly moderated and they kind of like build off one another instead of just having like passive discussions about this stuff where you go into a conversation, you go into an event or a discussion and then like you leave and that's the end of it. Like our newsletter, for example, give people the opportunity to actually like not just like write this stuff where you kind of have to like do that into the scenario thinking, but also like engage in a way it's like, oh, not only do I understand this, like I want to get involved. I want to be a part of this community. It's clear that they're like, you know, talking about something in a certain way where it's like, I want to be a part of it in and around there as well. But yeah, in summation, a lot of the stuff is like, we want to put people from different disciplines, like in this same like corridor and also just like see what kind of like comes out of it. Because I think it'll be a lot of new stuff and ideas that don't really exist. Because there's no real framework for this stuff. And it's quite hard to predict.
That's great. I mean, these are such important topics. To your point, and it's great you all are talking about this now, having the discussions so early on too, which is great. And there's even a comment we got about this, the time from Supriya, the time to discuss ethics in tech is definitely now. Grassroots student movement is powerful. So what you all are doing is very powerful and great work. And, you know, I agree. It's, you know, not only to your point, Bijal, when you were talking about it, it's like, you know, the people, the students you are that are part of your organization or you're talking to or anyone that's really involved in the discussions you're having or subscribes to your newsletter starts to have these tools and this language and understanding that they can use in the corporate environment as they go searching along their career path and getting started out there. But, you know, one thing I thought of too is even entrepreneurship, like some people will want to start their own companies. And so it's almost like they're starting with these things in mind earlier now, which is a really cool thing that you're helping with as well. To kind of, you know, I don't know if you both have heard the term mobile first or AI first development. Yeah, like designing a web app or something, but starting with the mobile version so that it's optimized for mobile and then build out like what it would look like on a desktop experience. You're almost doing like the responsible technology first approach. And then, you know, the rest of the technology stuff after in like an analogous way, which is kind of cool. And one thing that's interesting too, is that there are now more and more, and again, this is, you know, to Supriya's point here in the comment, and there's some other comments here that are really good, but the time really is now, and it's so important, and people are finally talking about it and having these discussions, and there are organizations like out there. I don't know if you saw recently the World Economic Forum announced that a new project called the Global AI Action Alliance, I believe it's called. And then there's some other organizations. And here you are at the student university level, sort of getting that going earlier on too, which is really compelling. And let's see, there's another comment here. It's a bit like AutoML having machines and algorithms focus on the boring. Yes. On the augmented intelligence side of it. Absolutely. So what do you, I mean, we talked a bit now about what you all are doing, what the plans are, which areas. And I like that you brought up, Mason, this idea of actionability, right? Because it's one thing to discuss. It's another thing to do and take action. And so, you know, beyond the events you're doing and maybe even beyond Northwestern, beyond Rezo, what you're doing now, where do you see yourself continuing with this? What do you have on the horizon? Anything? I know, Bijal, you talked about getting into this policy side, maybe some law work there. So maybe just both of you can talk a little bit more about sort of how you see this fitting into some of your future plans. as well?
Yeah. I'll go back to what I said about like 15 minutes in. There's a question mark around just like logistics with potentially being back in person in the fall. Like obviously our newsletter won't change that much. Our discussions probably won't change too much, but like the like connection with like actual speakers at events and actually like potential mentors and like partnerships there could change quite a lot. And it's going to be a lot harder to like potentially we just continue to have those like purely remotely. As an idea, but we've floated the idea. Again, like I mentioned, like a chapters program or some sort of like student ambassadors program, where you find students at other universities to kind of like have their own like Rezo style discussions internally there. Perhaps just like if it's plug our newsletter or just get more people in like a Slack channel or some other sort of community tool. You know, that would be fantastic because like at least my vision of like also it's been really, really interesting conversing with Northwestern through this whole process because there's been so little of it. Usually when you start a student organization, you like can basically go and set up meetings and talk to people. And like, there's been very little like communication on that end. It's just been harder when like back through email or just not thinking about it because they're kind of just like following our gut and doing what's important because like there's probably 75 rules I've broken I don't even know about like just doing this I wouldn't know so there's obviously some question marks there, but one of the things that we definitely floated was like potentially seeing this as like as a separate organization, as something that's like okay, like community first. What does that mean? There's a lot of online community, like Reddit, for example, like one subreddit is like a massively dedicated community. All Tech is Human is 1,100 people on a Slack channel, just basically introducing themselves and then not a lot of discourse happening other than just news. And so we're thinking there's a lot there. There's a lot that we could do separate from Northwestern or separate from still focusing on students and young people and not really diverging a lot from our general model, but just how we could potentially like still have like these different viewpoints just like smacking against one another. We're really interested in that. What that looks like, I'm not entirely sure. What we're gonna primarily focus on just basically mastering what we're doing now through the rest of this quarter and seeing where we are in the fall. Hopefully Beej will still helping out. I don't know. But that's overall that's the idea and that's the goal. I would love to see this as a separate thing. I think it could work incredibly well. There's no one working on it outside of, you know, very, very strong advocacy groups, but to somehow it seems like it could be a vertical. It seems like something there that could be, you know, fantastic and just like give birth to it a lot of other great ideas. I think that could work quite well.
Yeah. And like, and I think the vision for me, like just long-term is just building this really, really strong community of like young students who aren't yet affiliated with any like tech companies or organizations, that they have that power to make that choice of where they're going to work and what they're going to do. And like Supriya mentioned, like that grassroots student movement, I think is like really strong because students, we do have a lot of like activist energy. We do want to like change things when we're younger. And I think like harnessing that and like, especially in the tech world, like young people are like probably the most like attuned to technology, attuned to what's being used. So I think just really harnessing that and like creating this great community of students who are really trying to like do tech for good and making sure like everything is set for them. So when they go out in the future, they're not experiencing horrible technologies. But I think like, as Mason mentioned, like expanding to other chapters and like expanding to other universities, like there are actually a lot of, I mentioned this earlier, like I found a couple of high school groups that are working on topics like this, which I think is like absolutely amazing. And like kind of just like collaborating with them all, really making the centralized group of students who can like learn from each other. And the other part I wanted to mention is I think it's really valuable for students to see someone else who has the same interests as them and kind of talk to them and see like, what's your thoughts on what you're gonna do in the future? Where do you think you're gonna work? Things like that. Like since this area is so broad and you can have so many different disciplines in terms of how you work on AI ethics from whatever background you come from, if you're like wanna do more of a psych and mental health background, if you wanna do like policy stuff, like meeting other students that are doing something similar and have that same passion with you, like is very empowering and very like gives you a much stronger push to actually work in that area. Cause you don't feel like you're alone. You don't feel like, is this like a really weird interest? Can I actually work in this field? Versus like meeting other students and talking to them being like, oh, let's think about what companies have you looked into work at, like things like that? Because that's something people don't usually talk about, but that like networking within students themselves is like really big. And like for me personally, I've had great impacts with that, of like meeting other students through All Tech is Human who are on the same level as me and like have the same interests, and like sending job apps back and forth, things like that. So I think like the future is like having this really strong, like tight-knit community of like young students who are all about to embark on whatever careers they do, but can like talk about responsible tech, talk about responsible AI, and really think about like how they're gonna shape their careers to like this new tech revolution and stuff like that.
Awesome. Well, that's a perfect ending to this really, really great conversation that we've had today. Thank you both, Mason and Bijal, for coming on AI with Alex Live. It's been super fun. I learned a lot. It was great to hear what you all are up to, and I wish you the best of luck and success with this and everything else you do from here on out. And thank you everyone else that joined today. I saw we had some viewers live with us, so that was great, and great comments, everyone, and questions. And if you haven't subscribed to AI with Alex on YouTube, do so now to stay current with the latest videos and interviews that we have coming out. And thanks again, everyone. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.